We welcome you to Press Row, a TxAgs produced podcast with local media, and it is episode number 8 of the 2020 Aggie Football edition of the program, and boy, do we have quite a bit to cover for you today. We'll dive into A&M's 48-3 win over South Carolina. We'll hit all of our individual storylines. We'll tackle the very latest surrounding the Aggies and COVID-19 and the postponement of this weekend's trip to Tennessee, and what happens to be appears to be a pretty foggy outlook regarding next week's matchup with Ole Miss when you factor in its 14-day quarantine from Sunday, which would be the day after Ole Miss. So got to get into a lot of that. Press Row and all TxAgs podcasts can be found at TxAgs.com/podcast or on iTunes or however you access podcasts. I'm Gabe Bach, joined by my TxAgs radio partner in crime and TxAgs columnist, Olin Buchanan, Robert Sesson of the Bryan College Station Eagle, Justin Woodard of KAGS making his debut in place of Mike Lucas today, and Brent Zwerneman of the Houston Chronicle. And Justin, we welcome you to the show. It's about time we got some deep ball conversation going. Come on, my man. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. You know, it's crazy. A&M passing game, you know, Mon is honorable mention this week for Earl Campbell Tyler Rose Award. And, you know, you look up each week and Jimbo talks about balance. And I'm like, what do you mean balance? All you're doing is smash mouth football. But you look up and they do have some balance in the passing game. It's crazy.
Yep. And we're going to dive into that, guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. What a week to get Justin Woodard his very first opportunity here to come on here. Let's start with a lead story this week, guys. Lead story in Aggieland, lead story around the SEC. What, four games have already been canceled in the league. COVID-19 continues to have a gigantic impact on college football. Really hit home on Monday when Jimbo Fisher announced that practice was canceled, that the team was switching to Zoom-only meetings, retesting every player again, every member of the program, and sorting through all the contact tracing stuff. Safety Damani Richardson stayed home from the trip to South Carolina after Thursday's result. Last week unveiled a positive result. Per Jimbo, Sunday's round of tests confirmed two additional positives. One was an unnamed player, the other an off-field staffer. Then on Tuesday, the SEC announced that A&M's game against Tennessee postponed to December 12th. That's one of three, now four SEC games as of earlier today on hold. A&M Athletics Director Ross Bjork tells ESPN as many as 12 players are in quarantine for 14 days, but he also told TxAgs Radio this morning with Lucci and me that Tuesday's test revealed no new positives. So the number as of right now, still at three. Let's go around the horn. Brent, let's start with you. Just, you've covered this team a long time. All three of you guys have for a long time. Let's get into this thing going around the horn and just reaction to the news that's happened this week. Brent?
Well, as a tweeter tweeted at me, Halloween is undefeated, baby. Yeah. It looks like it's still, you know, I remember Halloween being undefeated when I was a younger man and going to the tap on Halloween because it was quite a sight. And apparently that hasn't changed down in the Northgate Bar District. And not just Northgate, shouldn't narrow it down to A&M, but I don't think there's any question. You know, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, someone asked him, why do you think this is happening now? And he said, well, I have my thoughts, and he kind of kept those to himself. But to me, I think it all comes back to a lot of people's favorite holiday, a lot of young people's favorite holiday, so to speak.
Yep. Olin, we saw spikes at Memorial Day. We saw spikes around July 4th, and we're seeing a little bit of a wave here again post-Halloween.
Yeah, because not only like Brent said, but let me say this. I know for a fact that Halloween may be undefeated, but when Brent was out there, at least it was pushed into overtime. because not only do you have the parties and everything, but then you have the change in the weather. So I think you could have almost, if we thought about it beforehand and really put some thought into it, you could have almost predicted that this would be a week all across the SEC, maybe even across the country, that there would be some issues like this. And I'm just glad that the SEC officials understood that something like this could happen and arranged the schedule such where there would be some time to possibly, you know, make up these games.
Cease, what is your take on what we're seeing right now?
You know, I figure we all felt this could happen at some time, but yet when A&M seemingly everything went along so smooth, A&M's going to be that team where maybe they're going to avoid it all year long. Maybe we'll get through the whole schedule without a pitch. And then when Jimbo talks so fast, and it's like, did he just say that, you know, they're not going to, you know, there's no practice today. And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, we have to deal with COVID. And now we're thinking about, will we have to deal with COVID again? Will the Ole Miss game get canceled? What about Thanksgiving? Do people go around, get together around Thanksgiving? Do you have a lot? Could there be another cancellation come December? Suddenly, we're asking a lot of questions and don't have a lot of answers.
Justin?
I think Jimbo said on the SEC teleconference on Wednesday that a position group got wiped out pretty hard. So, I mean, I think that's what you come to expect with the contact tracing, right? It's probably not, like you said, 12 players, but if it's one position group, say an offensive line or defensive line, there's no way, obviously, to play that shorthanded. Plus, the SEC had the regulation set forth you know, before the season even started, that if you had a certain position group limited number, you can't play. It isn't a bad thing, though, that maybe we're playing football on December 19th, last regular season game. I know Aggie fans would want that to be in the SEC championship game, but is it all bad? They might be on the field that weekend, too, rivaling the SEC championship game.
That's a great point. I don't think it is all bad, but Brent wanted to – let's kick it off with your storyline, Brent, because I think that plays right into it.
Okay. Yeah, Aggies were in a big-time role. I mean, as Olin has pointed out before, it seems like Jimbo Fisher's teams get better as the season goes on. But on a big-time role, they win by 45 points at South Carolina. They're going into a Tennessee team that hasn't been as good as people projected. And so now, suddenly that's by the wayside. And my thought was, we saw it when the Aggies had the bye week. Out of sight, out of mind, they're off, they're enjoying a weekend off. And what did they do? They dropped in the polls. They dropped from 7 to 8 in the AP poll. So I'm thinking, you know, it really hurts their momentum. I know it's out of their hands. It's not their fault, you know, for the most part, and all those things with the contact tracing. But I do think long-term it hurts their chances with the idea that they're trying to make their first college football playoff. Now, okay, so that game will be December 12th. Now maybe they'll play Ole Miss on December 19th if that home game doesn't take place. So we'll see. But I just think I think those good things for the Aggies need to happen now in terms of building momentum and squeezing into that top four as opposed to a rush right at the end of the regular season when it's kind of much more helter-skelter.
What do you guys think about that? I mean, it was kind of like 2012 when you were rolling. They didn't have a bye week, and it really – that helped them. They never had an opportunity to slow down.
Well, you know, my point has always been, you know, I like to go play cards in Vegas and places like that. So if I've won 7, 8 hands in a row, I'm not going to get up and go to the bathroom. You know, I'm going to stay there and keep playing. So I think the Aggies want to keep playing. It's unfortunate that they can't. So it's out of your hands. So the best thing you can do is look at it and try to look at the silver lining. And, you know, it appears to me that Isaiah Spiller has a sore ankle. And Hawker's been out. So, you know, you look at the silver lining and you say, okay, well, this is an opportunity to get some guys maybe healthier and for that last push in the last four games. But if you had your druthers, I suspect that the Aggies would rather be playing, because when you're on a roll, you don't – what was they saying, Bull Durham? You don't want to mess with a streak. I'll make it G-rated.
Cease, obviously, you want to stay clean of all this stuff and not succumb to this quarantine situation and be able to just keep rolling. But as it currently stands, you know, you're kind of hovering along that 53-man scholarship roster limit, deemed by the SEC to be the minimum amount of scholarship players to play a game. Then, like Justin pointed out, if you get ravished with injuries at a particular position, you can't fall below 7 offensive linemen, as an example. If you get to that, the worst thing could have happened really is you kind of limp up to Tennessee with a minimal roster and 30-something of your 53 players are freshmen and only 6 of those play, and you lose, right? So, you know, my point is get right, get healthy. Like Olin said, get Spiller back 100%, and your next game is probably going to be LSU, and then you just roll them because they're just so hideous, and get things rolling right again. Florida showed us, Cease, that you can get rolling even after multiple weeks off.
Right. Florida had 2 weeks off, and I agree. The one positive that can come out of this would be get 100 people 100% healthy. But I saw, Brent, I grew up in farmland. You want to get that hay in the barn as quick as you can. And A&M was 5-1, and I wanted to see get all 10 games in, because you just never know down the road. A&M gets to 9-1. I like their chances, but suddenly 8-1, 7-1, could that be used against them? Because I thought the SEC was smart looking ahead with, I'm saying the Pac-12 ain't going to get games in. 10 started having cancellations, and I thought having more, you know, good games for the committee would be good. So I want to get those games in for A&M because they're on a roll. And, yeah, I could see one or two positives, but, man, when you got four in a row, and, yeah, that was – Brent touched on it. That was one of the most complete games I've seen from A&M in a long time. I wanted to be in Knoxville on Saturday.
We all did. Yeah, no question about it. Justin, going back to your main point, though, as got us kicked off with this part of the conversation, you got R.C. Slocum on the selection committee. If you play the schedule as is prior to this postponement and you're finished on December 5th, are you out of sight, out of mind 2 weeks and one day later when they actually make a vote? You know, if you're looking for silver linings that Olin talked about, Justin, you're looking at the fact that A&M's probably definitely going to play on December 12th, and then probably there's a high likelihood the Ole Miss game gets moved back and you play that the day before the committee announcement. If you roll them, it's kind of like Kyler stole the Heisman because he was so great late. Tua was hurt, and we were all bored from him. Ohio State on the 11th hour, night before the first bracket went bell. They were amazing against Wisconsin, and they take it over Baylor, TCU. There's a chance A&M could do that by playing great on the 12th and 19th.
Well, look, and I think the other point of it is, like, these teams A&M are playing, they're not ranked. They're not good. So, right, the only team in there is Auburn that you're really, really going to open the committee's eyes if you roll Auburn, maybe, if they're still top 25 by them. And then let's be honest, Ole Miss, Tennessee – LSU, are those really marquee wins in the committee's eye anyway? Not really, right? I mean, A&M's supposed to win. You're supposed to win those games. So I think at that point, I don't really think it matters when you play as long as you win them. But if it's me and you're on the same weekend as Bama and the rest of the championship games from the other leagues, all eyes on A&M if you put up a big win there.
Yeah, I agree. Well, tell you what, guys, line of scrimmage has been very impressive, Cease. I know that's something you wanted to hit on, too.
I'm laughing, guys. When's the last time we want to argue about or talk about what's better, the offensive line or the defensive line? We talk about the SEC, and I'll never forget when we came from the pass-happy Big 12, so to speak. Everybody said, oh, SEC's a line of scrimmage league, and I'm thinking, how could it be that bad? Then you get in and see these animals up close, watch Johnny Manziel being, you know, even he was chased down a times. I think about the big Auburn guy whose name escapes me right now, where A&M wins that game. If it gets away from that guy, that guy sacked him like back-to-back times. This is D-Ford. A line of scrimmage league. D Ford, I'm sorry. I knew it was a tough name to remember. Thanks, Gabe. So you look at the lines, and right now that offensive line that I've just ridiculed the last couple years, it, to me, is just so great to watch. And now the defensive line is, you know, the defensive line is so good, sometimes I don't know who's out there. Travis will hit me, goes, they got four D in right now, or they only got two ends. The lines are so good right now. That's one of the big reasons A&M's 5-1. And I give the nod to the offensive line right now just because you look at third down conversions, which we'll talk about, the lack of turnovers, the confidence I'm on. Right now I give the offensive line an edge, but wow, what a good debate to have of which line better.
What do you guys think, O-line or D-line?
Gabe, you know, I've covered a lot of things over the years, remarkable things. I covered Ben Bittner living under a bridge and playing for the Aggies. So yeah. I've covered some pretty wild things.
By choice, I think.
Yeah, no, it was by choice. Lived. He would shower. Yeah, we were roommates. He would shower at the Bright football complex. So,
yeah.
But all that's leading to say, I think this turnaround by this offensive line is maybe right up near the top of the most remarkable things I've covered in this program over about 25 years with what they've done. From all of us writing and talking about in the offseason, hey, this offensive line allowed 2.62 sacks per game last year, worst in the SEC, 107th nationally. To now, what is it, five straight games without a sack? And we talk about how much better Kellen Mond has gotten, and he has gotten. He is more aware in the pocket and all those things. But a big part of that is this offensive line. And what's even more remarkable is it's the same guys. It's not like some superhero got plugged into the action there. Now, Ryan McCollum is healthy, or as healthy as he can be, and he's played a big role at center. But I'm telling you, it is the you know, it's kind of boring to write about offensive lines and things like that. So it's probably the most underreported part of this story. But it's been remarkable what this line has done, half, six games into the season.
What do you guys think?
I would have to say the offensive line too, because first of all, we expect the defensive line to be pretty good, right? And it has been. But gosh, when you look at what A&M is doing with, again, two sacks all year, and you got a guy who's going to rush for 1,000 yards in a 10-game season. And they've just been so dominant. And, maybe – I don't think we should have expected this to happen. We should maybe expect them to be better just because McCollum was back in the lineup and Kenyon Green had a year of experience. And then we found out that Carson Green played last year with a broken wrist. So they got healthy and they got some more experience. But I'd be lying if I told you I thought they'd play at this level. And if you said you thought they would, you'd be lying too.
No, I think we expected them to be better, just not to this level. Remember the segments we were doing and writing, and I'm sure we all did it like, okay, wow, Carson Green gave us a lot of information. We didn't know about Prater, the significance of that injury. We didn't know about his own multi-year situation with a broken wrist. Dan Moore wouldn't divulge, but he was hurt too, and Kenyon Green's a true freshman. Like, we could tell it was going to be better, but to what level? Like, if it was a 1 last year, we might have thought it was a 6. It's playing like a 9 right now. Agree, Justin?
Yeah, I agree. And I asked Jimbo, too. It's like the defenses know what's coming, too. I mean, we're going to talk about it a little bit. It's not like the A&M passing game is going to scare the daylights out of any defense. So they know coming in that Jimbo's going to run the ball, 45, 40 times a game, and they're still moving the ball on the ground, obviously leading the SEC and yards per attempt, over five a rock, right? So five a carry. So, I mean, that's doing some major damage. And let's not forget, guys, number 28 is making guys miss in the hole now too. Last year, maybe the offensive line didn't give him much room, but he also went – he was good yards after contact, but this year he's even taken to another level. So I think that helps make the O-line look better. But when you're getting the push they are on even the zones and the outsides, it's impressive. The sacks, too, I'll give him that. But also, I think keep in mind, number 11, Mon's getting the ball out of his hands way, way faster this year.
So how about a little kudos?
And one of the big keys to the pass protection, quite frankly, has been Spiller, who's done a heck of a job in pass protection, too. But, but still, you start with that offensive line. I agree with what Justin said about Spiller being able to make guys miss. But a lot of times I see him carrying the ball, and he's not getting any close to contact for 2 or 3 yards downfield.
They're getting a big-time push, OB, and I know you want to make a point, too. It's really helping them in the red zone. That and Jimbo's got the ability to scheme it up down there, too.
Yeah, there's so many things you could talk about that's going right for A&M. And, of course, one of the biggest issues for any successful team is red zone success. And in their 4-game stretch here, I think A&M is 18 of 19 in the red zone. 16 of those were touchdowns, which is incredibly successful. But then when you break it down further and realize the two field goals were both against at the end of the half and the end of the game against Florida. And with better clock management, you could have scored touchdowns on both of those. And then the one time they didn't score is when they just decided to take a knee there in the fourth quarter against Mississippi State. So easily you could have been 19-19 and all touchdowns. Who does that?
It's just unreal. I've never seen anything like that from A&M. Have you guys? I mean, even with Johnny, they were stalling out some.
Well, I was about to say,
miss a kick, an angled kick. We're used to that.
During the Sumlin era, wasn't that the kind of the knock on that offense? It was flashy. It was good. It would get you down the field, but you get in the red zone and you get in trouble because you're not able to pound it. And, like what we've talked about with what this offensive line and what Spiller and Mond are able to do now, you didn't have that then under Kevin Sumlin. And a lot of times, as Jimbo pointed out, he wasn't talking about Sumlin, of course, but there's a big difference between the touchdown at 7 points and the 3 points or no points in that situation. And certainly that's been a huge part of their success. When the previous regime in the SEC, when you're going up against those SEC defenses, those defensive lines, that's when they really kind of cowboy up in that position and hold a team to a field goal. Well, that's not happening with the Aggies this season.
I looked it up, and red zone touchdown percentage with Johnny was 10th and 12th. But since then, it's dwindled, to your point, Brent. But they were fantastic with Johnny. But the Sumlin offense post-Johnny.
Yeah, I should have said Kevin Sumlin 2014 to 2017.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, look at South Carolina, they actually prided themselves on their red zone defense. They only allowed 12 of 21 touchdowns. And A&M shredded them. And the play that Jimbo designed for Wiedemeyer to catch that touchdown against the flow, oh, my gosh. Any one of us could have caught the ball and walked in. Even though we couldn't
first one, talk. Right?
Now, Cease, you're sounding like Isaiah Spiller when he's saying anybody can run for 6 yards behind that blocking. Anybody can do it.
I believe what they say.
That was excellent play action. You know, it happened twice. They did it twice. They liked it so – nice, they did it twice with that play. And, man, he is another storyline. Owen mentioned all the storylines you could talk about. Wiedemeyer, here's a guy who was rated the number 359th guy in his class. And now he's one of the top few tight ends in the nation.
You better believe it. Maybe he'll get screwed by the Mackey one year.
That's how you know you're great.
Absolutely. Got to get two guys from Iowa in. Ridiculous. Justin, you know, he's got an interesting subset of weapons here, right? But
yes,
they're having success in the passing game despite still trying to figure some stuff out, aren't they?
Did we see Cam Brown at all last game? Did we see anybody besides Hezekiah Jones last game on the outside? I mean, they're there, they're in the game. Jalen Preston's in the game, right? But I guess they don't need him. They don't need to throw it to him, but seriously, the scheme job that Jimbo's doing right now, Wiedemeyer early on really wasn't doing much, right? Those first couple games were like, where's Wiedemeyer? And then now all of a sudden he's exploded. But the play action game right now is so good. The dig routes, 10 to 12 yards over the middle. The slant route is there for Jimbo right now. Mond is really seeing it. You know, he may not have the superstar to throw to, but he knows where he needs to go with it and the time he needs to get rid of the ball. But it's clear that the crossing routes is A&M's and Jimbo's go-to right now. And why not? Because when you play action, the linebacker's got to come up so hard. You got to – I wish I could see Mond's view of the open space that he's got over the middle. But how about a chain right down the seam out of the backfield too? So it's not like they're not throwing it deep. They did. So we can't knock Jimbo and say, hey, you're not throwing it deep because he just did. But he's just doing it in creative ways, I guess, so to speak, without having a – bona fide star like a Mike Evans on the outside.
Well, they had it, but, you know, imagine what this offense would look like if Chapman had not gotten hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, you got to realize when we kind of have fun with Woodard here, he's an OU fan. So he's used to just slinging up against peewee defenses, the 11 pylon defenses in the Big 12 Eastern, as all of them would say. And so when you come in here, I bet he was losing his mind when Chapman was going nuts. I'd love to have been next to you. And all of a sudden, the sucker gets hurt. But they're still scheming it up, guys. Yes. I looked it up. A&M's 25th in the country in pass plays over 30 yards. 14th in the country, pass plays over 40 yards. 20th in the country, pass plays over 50 yards. And doing it without a real deep threat on the outside right now. Scheming it up and doing it.
Well, you know, Gabe, you bring that up. Last year, all of last year, 13 games with three non-conference, you know, nobodies, A&M had 10 pass completions of 30 yards or more, and in six games they got 11.
Yeah,
and that's without having that. We thought maybe by now DeMond Demas would be that guy that'd be a deep threat, if not Chapman. They're still looking for that. I think that's the last piece of this offense. I don't know if they're going to find it, but they've definitely found a way to work around it, as Justin was pointing out.
Brent, you lose Osborne, you lose Rogers, you lose Davis, you lose Buckley. And the pass game's a million times better right now, even with some guys still trying to figure out who they are out there.
Say it goes back to, you know, it's all the more remarkable what Kellen Mond has done. He has one upperclassman in the two deep now, and that guy's only been around the last two games. And have y'all noticed how grateful Kellen Mond seems to have Hezekiah Jones? Maybe just because they're closer in age, you know? Kellen's tired of being around all these kids or something like that. But
needle and thread, Hez Jones. And
yeah, fix his pants while he's at it. Yeah, I give really a lot of credit to Kellen for not just saying, you know, and I've wondered this last week when I was watching the South Carolina game. What is Jamon Osmond thinking right now? What is going through his mind as he's watching this team that's number five in the nation on the cusp of the college football playoff? If they keep playing like they are, they're going to at least be in consideration in the end. What is he thinking when he's seeing all this as that senior go-to guy who was the team's leading receiver going into this season?
You know, maybe, Brent, that A&M could talk to Osmond and see, since they're off, how you get better and not play.
Yeah, exactly. It's fascinating. Like, I feel like 10 years from now, Brent's going to do a blowout piece on Osmond, the Houston kid. Right? And then what was it really like going through that when A&M went all 2020 and won the national championship? And
you weren't a part of it. These games keep getting suspended. That story's going to be next week.
Copy.
Where's Osmond? Exactly. That's fun stuff. I mean, the South Carolina game was fun, guys. I mean, it was really fun to watch a total. We talked about it going into the game, didn't we? That A&M has shown enough defensively, but they need to play complementary football where let's do it at the same time where the offensive defense is playing great within like one drive to the next and then put that together for an entire game. And then, boom, we saw it for a game. If you can do it for a game, you can do it for another game. You can do it for a stretch down the stretch and get to 9-1. That was just fun to watch. I mean, I couldn't tell you in the South Carolina game, I had a tough time telling you I thought the offense played better than the defense or I thought the defense played better than the offense. It was a complete win. It was fun to watch.
And here's why I don't gamble. If y'all remember what I said on this very – in this very corner last week, it was going to be a close game. The Aggies were going to win, but they weren't going to cover because South Carolina was coming off a bye week. Will Muschamp was 4-1 at South Carolina in those situations. And the Aggies had their toughest day of practice off Tuesday by NCAA mandate because of the voting. So I said, it's going to be a close game. They'll cover. I mean, they'll win, but they won't cover. It shows you how much I know because I don't think I've seen – you know, you're used to seeing a game like that from A&M when it's a non-conference home game. That was so strange to see them doing that to a fellow SEC team where it's like they're emptying the bench late in the game and just wild to see, you know, putting up 48 and could have been more.
Yeah, listen to all those cheers and mock cheers and applause by the South Carolina fans. There were so few of them there. They sounded like 100 disgruntled fans, not 30,000, but they were upset. And, you know, you see those, you know, you think about traveling and spending $1,000 or more if you're a South Carolina fan to get that run over. No wonder you were jeering and mock cheering.
You heard it too, OB. You could hear it from the press box.
Well, they first started at Mike Bobo because he's right next to us. So it's funny. When you have, as weird as it seems, when you have 50,000 people, you cannot hear them the same way you hear when there's 5,000, right? So you can actually hear the taunts and the profanity directed toward Mike Bobo. And then when they got tired of yelling at Bobo, they started the fire Muschamp. And that right there alone was worth, you know, the price of the travel up there, because they were some as my mother would have said, they were as mad as an old wet hen at the rooster.
Pretty good.
Pretty impressive too, right? Yeah. And all but the last three wins have all been by double digits. I mean, Arkansas was a blowout until the Razorbacks got two late touchdowns too. So, I mean, that's really two blowout wins in a row from a team that I didn't think they were capable of blowing anybody out in the SEC, but now they're kind of putting it all together. And the defense too, guys, they kind of got that killer instinct too. I think they can kind of sense when the game is – the offense is rolling and they're like, okay, we get one more stop here. The offense goes and scores and this game's on ice. Not giving up the big play too on defense, I think it's helping keeping the momentum going. They're getting off the field, getting that ball back to the offense. And I think that, Gabe, you mentioned complementary football. That's what Jimbo talks about. But that when they have the momentum right now, maybe in years past, you all covered them way longer than I have, but the last 2 years I've been here, they didn't have that killer instinct, right? I didn't think they could ever put a game away in the third quarter. At Auburn comes to mind to me. I was there 2 years ago, and they let that game slip away. So that killer instinct seems to be coming for this team as well at the right time.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things about the defense is that pass rush is really coming on, and they didn't get to the quarterback that much in terms of sacks last week. But South Carolina missed a couple of opportunities in the early in the first quarter, and man, that really came back because later in the game you saw that pass rush come on, a lot of confidence, and that quarterback, even though he didn't get sacked but twice, he got rattled and hurried, and I thought he looked like he was really on the verge of panicking anytime he had a second long or a third long I had to throw.
Any final thoughts before Brent's got to go to the bus stop?
Hey, I was still laughing about Owen talking about, because that has been one of the eye-opening things about this whole COVID deal is, remember early in Major League Baseball, hearing the conversations, you know, they had to add the crowd noise because those conversations, so many of them were yelling, were off color. And that's not from people in the stands, because at that point there weren't any. It was the interaction between the managers and players and players and players and things like that. So suddenly they're adding fake crowd noise. So that is interesting that based on fewer people, you can hear more from the crowd than the collective roar.
I learned so much about
part of this.
You know? I learned so much about Mike Bobo's mother just by.
Oh, that's good stuff.
You used to date her? I'm sorry.
I'm just saying by the crowd from what they were telling me or telling him.
Back when OB was running things in East Texas, she might have.
Owen was up there.
She might have got out with Brent on Halloween.
Hey, Owen was up there in the press box saying, "Hey, Mike, just trying to help you out here. Did you hear that? I want to make sure you heard that."
That's right. All right, what did we miss, guys? One thing I was going to bring up is just, you know, the depth starting to really shine. No Damani, Carper gets a pick. No Clemens, he's going to be out for a while, so that's a storyline. Leads the team in sacks. Tyree Johnson looks like he's in midseason form. He's been on a little tear here of late. No, you know, Spiller goes out two plays into the third quarter. Achane gets 135 total yards and two touchdowns. Hawker goes down the third, and Layden Robinson causes Cole Kubelik to go bonkers on how good Layden Robinson was, just putting dudes right on their back. So, depth, that's what you recruit to. Recruitment, development, and you're going to see exactly what we saw right there. That's a big part of it.
I asked Jimbo this week, I said, his answer kind of surprised me a little bit. I asked him, we've heard it for years around here, does A&M actually look like an SEC team? And I asked Jimbo that question, does this team look like an SEC team? And he said, yes. I thought it was going to be, hey, we're still trying to build to get to that point. He is fully confident now, and it's showing up on the field, going to your point, Gabe, that depth. You lose one guy, you can plug in another guy who is, it might even be in some situations more talented, but just younger. Because Jimbo's done such a good job in his first couple of years recruiting. So, yeah, his answer was, yes, this does look like an SEC team. And it goes back to Cease's point, trying to decide which is better, the defensive line or the offensive line, because that's where it all starts in this league.
We talked about the SEC line of scrimmage link. If you want to be up there with the Alabamas and Ohio States, you have to have quality depth, and that's what A&M has right now, which you guys have all talked about, and we've seen guys go down, and we didn't even really noticed Clemens wasn't out there, which is once again speaks of where this team is, but where the program is.
Definitely. Justin, come on, throw one more deep. Come on, give me a seven step drop. What else?
I think Achane needs more. Well, it's hard to argue needs more carries. I like the two back set. I think that's very dang. I know Mike, that's Mike's favorite formation, but I think more of Achane and Spiller in the back with Kellen down the stretch is as he gains more and more confidence, Jimbo does an odd chain. I think we're going to see number six out there a lot more. Obviously we saw him in the playoffs, Fort Bend Marshall take down Consol twice and took down Huntsville. I always saw that game in person. He can absolutely fly. The thing about odd chain is he runs through some dudes too. It's not like he's just a speed guy. That really surprised me. I didn't think he was that strong or had gotten that strong. I think the depth in the backfield is really good.
Hey, I'm a big two back guy too, and I want to see Anais in the game with both two, Achane and Spiller, all three of those guys at the same time. Brent,
I think Justin plays fullback, by the way, on the media football team. The accurate Justin?
No, you don't want me blocking anybody. You'll die.
Okay. Well, I know for a fact Lee Fedora is glad that at iChains, not at Fort Bend Marshall, because he lost to him twice. And I talked to Lee Fedora today. He calls him Acne, but iChain. But he knows how good he is. But he thinks he's got Acne. He's got iChain Jr., that freshman running back at Consolidated. So name to follow away there. You guys, Gabe, incredible.
Gabe with that name dropping. Lee Fedora.
There you go. Yeah. It's my boy. It's my boy. All right, guys. What else? We miss anything? You got 40 seconds, Brent.
Man, I just wish I just wish we were seeing some football this Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess I understand, you know, in the SEC, the SEC is making it clear that they're saying, hey, these are county and CDC guidelines, not SEC guidelines, when they talk about the contact trace and everything, because people are saying, what, that's crazy, 14 days, why do you need to do that? And we like Nick Saban back out there on the field. But what they're saying is, it's kind of out of their hands in that situation. As Jimbo has said over and over, I think he started each press conference, but they're trying to do what's best for the safety of their players, first and foremost, long term.
Yeah, Brent subtly going with a Masters shirt today, too, I can tell. He got the green color going. All right, guys.
I'm ready for the Masters. The only saving grace is no Aggie football. Yeah, exactly. I'll watch the Masters all day.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt about it. All right, guys, enjoyed it. That's Press Row. You can find us on texax.com/podcast. You can find us on iTunes or however you take podcasts. And also, we're recording this on Veterans Day, so I want to thank all the veterans and those who've served, those who continue to serve our country. We wouldn't be able to sit over here and do all this and act like we know what the hell we're talking about without you. So we appreciate you, your fight for our freedom. So thank you very much. Press Row, TexAgs.com.